Welcome to EWTN's Crucial Questions, Catholic Answers. I'm Father Regis Scanlon from Denver, Colorado. I'm a Capuchin Franciscan of Mid-America Province. Welcome you today for a consideration of this question. Did the Second Vatican Council say that we can follow our conscience against the teachings of the Pope? Now, theologians today have suggested that the documents of Vatican II are not consistent on the requirement to give obedience and assent to the Pope's teachings. They say that Lumen Gentium, number 25, demands assent to the Pope. But they say that Dignitatis Humanae and Gaudium et Spes say that you must follow your conscience. It gives the primacy to conscience. So we're going to examine this. Let's examine this claim. Well, first of all, we want to look at Lumen Gentium 25. What does, in fact, Lumen Gentium 25 say? The Fathers of the Second Vatican Council state this in Lumen Gentium. This is a quotation from there, number 25. Quote, bishops who teach in communion with the Roman Pontiff are to be revered by all as witnesses of divine and Catholic truth. The faithful, for their part, are obliged to submit to the bishops' decisions made in the name of Christ and matters of faith and morals, and to adhere to it with a ready and respectful allegiance of mind. This loyal submission of will and intellect must be given in a special way to the authentic teaching authority of the Roman Pontiff, even when he does not speak ex cathedra, in such wise indeed that his supreme teaching authority be acknowledged with respect, and that one sincerely adhere to the decisions made by him, conformably with his manifest mind and intention, which is made known principally either by the character of the documents in question, or by the frequency with which a certain doctrine is proposed, or by the manner in which the doctrine is formulated. Now let's look at certain parts of this, Lumen Gentium 25, to make sure that we understand something very clearly. First of all, you'll notice that it says bishops who teach in communion with the Roman Pontiff. They're not talking about all bishops. They're talking about only those teachings of the bishops who teach in communion with the Roman Pontiff. Those bishops are to be revered as witnesses to divine and Catholic truth. Also, notice that they talk about a loyal submission of will and intellect, and they say this must be given in a special way to the Pope, a special way to the Holy Father. In what sense, we ask? Well, it says in such a way that he is respected even when he does not speak ex cathedra, in such wise that his teaching authority be sincerely adhered to. You have to sincerely adhere to the decisions made by him, conformably with his manifest mind and will. So we have to go according to what the Pope says when he teaches us something in faith and morals, even when he's not speaking ex cathedra. It says that we must assent to this with a submission of will and intellect, that's interior and exterior, and we must assent to it according to the way he wants us to assent to it, not according to the way we want to. We can't give it a different meaning. Okay? Must conform to his manifest mind and intention. All right, so that's what the Second Vatican Council, Lumen Gentium, states this. And now let's look at this other part in the Dignitatis Humanae, where the theologians say, yes, it's true. Lumen Gentium 25 says you have to assent to the Pope and his ordinary teachings on faith and morals. But they say in Dignitatis Humanae, it says you must follow your conscience. And Gaudium et Spes says you must follow your conscience, and so there's a conflict and a draw. We don't know what we should do, so everybody's free to do as they want. Well, let's look at what Dignitatis Humanae states. It states this, quote, that all men are to be immune from coercion on the part of individuals or of social groups and of any human power in such wise that in matters religious, no one is to be forced to act in a manner contrary to his own beliefs. Nor is anyone to be restrained from acting in accordance with his own beliefs, whether privately or publicly, whether alone or in association with others, within due limits. This right of the human person to religious freedom is to be recognized in the constitutional law whereby society is governed. Thus, it is to become a civil right. You'll find this in number 2 of Dignitatis Humanae, Second Vatican Council's document. Now, the fathers of the council stated in Gaudium et Spes this, quote, deep within his conscience, man discovers a law which he has not laid upon himself, but which he must obey. Now, do we see the difficulty, at least the claimed difficulty, that the theologians today, many point out? They say that since Dignitatis Humanae states that the principle of religious liberty, religious freedom, gives a person the right to dissent from civil authority, this implies that there is also a right to follow your conscience and dissent from church authority, from the Pope. So their fundamental argument, they don't say that that you can read Lumen Gentium and discover a right to dissent from the Pope. They don't say that. In fact, they don't say that you can read Dignitatis Humanae or Gaudium et Spes, and it doesn't explicitly say there you can dissent from the Pope. But they say, if you look at the internal logic, since Gaudium et Spes and Dignitatis Humanae both give the person the right to follow their conscience against the civil authority, then that implies that you also are free to follow your conscience against the church authority. That is the argument which they use. Now, but it is most certain that one cannot take a sentence or a paragraph dealing with religious freedom in relation to civil authority out of its context in Humanae and Dignitatis Humanae and correctly apply it to the Second Vatican Council's teaching about the person's relationship to the church and Lumen Gentium. The Council Fathers explicitly stated at the beginning of Dignitatis Humanae that it was their intention to apply the principle of religious liberty only to the person's relationship to civil authority. The Council Fathers explicitly stated that it was not their intention to apply the principle of religious liberty to the person's relationship to the church as stated in Lumen Gentium. And the Council Fathers stated this at the very beginning of their document, Humanae and Dignitatis Humanae. I'm going to read their statement. Okay, and it's found in number 1, and it's found in the introduction. And it says, quote, so while religious freedom, which men demand in fulfilling their obligation to worship God, has to do with freedom from coercion in civil society, it leaves intact the traditional Catholic teaching on the moral duty of individuals and societies towards the true religion and the one Church of Christ. And this traditional Catholic teaching, which the Church intended to leave intact, is the faithful must assent to the Pope's decisions on faith and morals, even when he does not speak his cathedra. In other words, Lumen Gentium 25. So where is the conflict? Let's put it this way. If a theologian tries to say that he can interpret Dignitatis Humanae and say that the principle of religious liberty found in Dignitatis Humanae, if he tries to say he can take that principle of religious liberty, which says you have freedom, follow your conscience against the state, and turn and apply it to the person's relationship to the Pope in Lumen Gentium, which the document on the person's relationship to the church, he can't do it. If a theologian says he's going to apply it that way, he can't do it, and he cannot do this because the document, Dignitatis Humanae itself, says you can't do it. They say they intend to apply this only, to a person's relationship to the state. Okay? So, while the council treated the relationship of the faithful to the authority within the church in Lumen Gentium, they treated the relationship of the people's authority to outside the church or to civil society in Dignitatis Humanae. And this is obvious by the very title. If you look at the title, Lumen Gentium is called what? It's called the Dogmatic Constitution on the Church. And Dignitatis Humanae is called the Declaration on Religious Freedom, on the Right of the Persons and of Communities to Social and Civil Freedom in Religious Matters. So it's obvious when you look at the very title of these documents that the one document, Lumen Gentium, is talking about the person's relationship to the Church. And the other document is talking about the person, the Dignitatis Humanae, is talking about the person's relationship to civil society. Now, when the Church says in Lumen Gentium that you have to assent to the Pope, and in Dignitatis Humanae it says that you can dissent from the civil authority, one cannot say that since they say you can dissent from the civil authority, you can then dissent from the Pope. That's improper, because they're not, the Council isn't dealing with the same thing in those documents. They're dealing with two different issues. Just because you can dissent from the state doesn't mean you can dissent from the Pope. And it's been that way ever in the history of the Church. So no matter how much one thinks that a person has a right to follow his conscience, contrary to the Pope's ordinary decisions in faith and morals, he cannot use the statements of Dignitatis Humanae to say that the Council explicitly suggests this position. This is so because the Council Fathers explicitly stated their intention not to apply the principle of religious freedom of Dignitatis Humanae to the person's relationship to the Pope in Lumen Gentium. And this explicit statement of the Fathers of the Council is part of the outer logic of the documents of Vatican II, especially Dignitatis Humanae itself. Now, this point that one cannot appeal to the freedom of conscience for a right to do what is contrary to the teachings of the Church is also found in Gaudium et Spes. For while the Council Fathers say in Gaudium et Spes, deep within, this is a quote, deep within his conscience man discovers a law which he has not laid upon himself, but which he must obey, unquote, they also state that, quote, often conscience goes astray through ignorance, unquote. And you'll find that in Gaudium et Spes number 16. Now, then after noting the dignity of the moral conscience and the fact that the people of our time prize freedom very highly and strive eagerly for it, the Fathers also state this in Gaudium et Spes, quote, yet they often cherish it improperly, as if it gave them leave to do anything they like, even when it is evil, unquote. And you'll find that in number 17 of the Gaudium et Spes. So Gaudium et Spes points out that often people's conscience goes, quote, astray, unquote, and that people incorrectly, improperly, quote, improperly, think that they can follow it, even though they know that it conflicts with the Church's teachings and sacred scripture, even though it tells them they can do something evil. And so here you have Lumen Gentium's teaching that we have to assent to the Pope. That is consistent with the Church's teaching in Dignitatis Humanae and also Gaudium et Spes. For Gaudium et Spes doesn't give a freedom of conscience to go against the teachings of the Pope or to do evil, and neither does Dignitatis Humanae give a person freedom to follow his conscience against the Church's teachings and do evil. But it is precisely, you know, by means of the, and specifically his conscience. The conscience is important. Now, we're not trying to say by this that one doesn't have to follow their conscience or that it's not important. The conscience is very, very important, and it is precisely by means of his human nature and specifically his conscience, with its natural law to do good and avoid evil, that man participates in the eternal law of God. And the Fathers of the Second Vatican Council in Gaudium et Spes state that, quote, the highest norm of human life is the divine law itself, eternal, objective, and universal. And they say this at Dignitatis Humanae number 3. So, while we have to form our conscience is not a law unto itself. It's not the highest law. They point out the highest law is the divine law, and it's eternal, it's objective, it's not subjective like the conscience. And therefore, we have to form our conscience according to this objective teaching of the Church. Now, Lumen Gentium number 25 and Dignitatis Humanae number 2 and Gaudium et Spes number 16 are all consistent, and they all teach the same doctrine. One must follow one's conscience. That's true. And if necessary, correct one's conscience by means of the teachings of the church. So all three documents are in harmony. They all teach that you're free to follow your conscience. You must follow your conscience. And it's true that if you do not know that a certain teaching conflicts with the teachings of the church, if you didn't know, for instance, that contraception was taught by the church that it was evil, and you were using contraceptives because you thought it was right, that you wouldn't be guilty of a sin because you have to follow your conscience. However, but once you know about the teachings of the church, once you know that the Pope teaches that the contraception is evil, then you are bound in conscience to follow the Pope's teachings. You are bound to form your conscience according to the teachings of the church. This is what the council says. This is their teachings. There's nothing inconsistent among these documents. Now, when John Paul II visited the United States in 1987, Archbishop Quinn, representing the Catholic bishops, stated publicly to the Pope before all the bishops, he said, quote, "We as pastors are greatly concerned that some particular areas of church teachings in both sexual and social morality are at times subjected to negative criticisms in our country, and sometimes even by Catholics of goodwill," unquote. And by the way, you'll find this in John Paul II's meeting with bishops of the United States, Our Lady Queen of Angels Minor Seminary in Los Angeles, California, a Wednesday, September 16th, 1987. It's found in the book Unity in the Work of Service, published by the United States Catholic Conference in Washington, D.C. in 1987. You'll find this on page 142, the statement by Archbishop Quinn. He's representing all the bishops. He says, "Holy Father, we have a problem. Even good Catholics are dissenting from your teaching on morality, marriage and morality, contraception and so forth." John Paul II replied to him, and it's a very, very important teaching. A statement. He cleared everything up for us. And you know what? I haven't heard this anywhere since I read it in this book. But it's amazing that it never came out publicly. But listen to John Paul II's response. He says, quote, "It is sometimes reported that a large number of Catholics today do not adhere to the teachings of the church on a number of questions, notably sexual and conjugal morality, divorce and remarriage. Some are reported as not accepting the church's clear position on abortion. It has also been noted that there is a tendency on the part of some Catholics to be selective in their adherence to the church's moral teachings. It is sometimes claimed that dissent from the magisterium is totally compatible with being a good Catholic and poses no obstacle to the reception of the sacraments. This is a grave error that challenges the teachings office of the bishops of the United States and elsewhere," unquote. Now, this is from that same source that I mentioned, Unity in the Work of Service, and it's found on page 144 of that work cited. It's a very important statement. Note that the Pope says this, quote, "It is sometimes claimed that dissent from the magisterium is totally compatible with being a good Catholic and poses no obstacle to the reception of the sacraments. This is a grave error." Our Holy Father is saying, for a person to say that they can dissent from the teachings of the Pope and then come and receive communion, this is a grave error, and it's going to be very harmful to them. And this is a very important matter. Like I said, I do not understand why, once that was said, it never seemed to make it into the papers. It never seemed to be reported by the news. So apparently something happened. John Paul II, what he was doing when he made that statement, besides answering the question that the American bishops had about what to do in the situation, he was applying Lumen Gentium 25 to the situation of the church in the United States. The faithful must submit or adhere in mind, will, and intellect to the Pope's faith and moral decisions, even when he does not speak ex cathedra. Even every bishop and priest must assent in his mind internally to the Pope's teaching on contraception, to be fully joined to the church and receive Holy Communion worthily. Lumen Gentium number 25 corrected the pre-Vatican II theological error that dissent from the Pope could at times be licit. That's what this was all about. That's why the Pope stated that. They had a difficult time, and if we examine the situation of the Church in the United States, we would see that if one would examine Human Life in Our Day, the document by the American bishops, and in that document they said that dissent from the magisterium could be done for serious reason as long as you don't cause scandal. But of course, what couple in their bedroom thinks they're causing scandal? What couple in their bedroom thinks they do not have a serious reason, you know, for dissenting from the Pope? Now, this dissent has grown. It has grown out of proportion. It's wrong. It has grown and has caused much harm in the Church. So much so that now you have the situation, or at least in 1987 you have the situation, of Archbishop Quinn reporting back to the Holy Father in his visit saying, now we have a tremendous problem of this dissent. Well, obviously, the cause of the problem was in the beginning they allowed dissent based upon pre-Vatican II theories found in the fine print of theological manuals, saying that if you were an expert in theology, or you were a theologian, you could dissent from the Pope's teachings. Okay? However, this is not true. Everyone must assent to the Pope's teaching in mind and intellect, and that's what Lumen Gentium 25, Vatican II's Lumen Gentium 25 states. That's what Lumen Gentium 25 clears up, that pre-Vatican II idea that you could dissent if it was an ex cathedra. And that's precisely what John Paul II was doing in 1987. He was applying that very statement, Lumen Gentium 25, to the situation in the United States of people dissenting from the Pope and the Magisterium with regards to contraception. Now, this means, the implications for this are very, very important for us all. It means that the Second Vatican Council teaches that when a Pope gives a teaching on faith and morals, that every Catholic, no matter who they are, must give an assent, an intellect and will, to each and every one of the Pope's teachings. And now, in other words, the assent that we must be given cannot just be external. It's just not exterior. It must also be interior. Thus, people who aren't even involved with contraception, like a priest or a bishop, the nun or brother has to accept the Church's teaching on contraception internally, even though they're not practicing it externally. And if they would not accept it internally, they would not be able to receive communion. So this teaching affects more than just a few people. This affects the whole Church. Now, why do we know for sure that this is the teaching, or I should say a good verification, an explanation of this teaching, is found actually by the Sacred Congregation. They explained this when they made this statement. Quote, when the Magisterium proposes in a definitive way truths concerning faith and morals, which even if not divinely revealed, are nevertheless strictly and intimately connected with revelation, these must be firmly accepted and held. When the Magisterium, not intending to act definitively, teaches a doctrine to aid a better understanding of revelation and make explicit its contents, or to recall how some teaching is in conformity with the truths of the faith, or finally to guard against ideas that are incompatible with these truths, the response called for is that of religious submission of will and intellect. This kind of response cannot be simply exterior or disciplinary, but must be understood within the logic of the faith and under the impulse and obedience of the faith. And that footnote, and it's a very important footnote, is the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith's instruction on the ecclesial vocation of the theologian, number 23, Origins, CNS Documentary Service, July 5th, 1990, page 122. So that shows that even a theologian must assent internally, externally, and internally with his will and intellect to each and every teaching of the Roman Pontiff on matters in faith and morals, to be Catholic, to receive Holy Communion. And so the question answered, did the Second Vatican Council give us a right to dissent from the Pope with regard to teaching in faith and morals, with regard to his teachings on faith and morals? Did the Second Vatican Council say we can follow our conscience against the teachings of the Pope? Form our conscience against the teaching of the Pope? The answer is clear. Absolutely not. In fact, it's just the opposite. We are bound in conscience to form our teachings according to the Pope. Now, I want to tell you about an article I've just wrote, and it's come out recently in July in 1997. It's an homiletic and pastoral review. This is published by Ignatius Press. And the title of this is American Catholics at the Crossroads. Now, if you want to look into this matter even further, and you want to have a good a list of the footnotes that I have discussed here, the sources that I discussed here in this talk today, then you ought to get this article. It is published, like I said, Homiletic and Pastoral Review, July 1997. It's published by Ignatius Press. You sent, asked for a copy of this. It's a very important document. It's a good article as far as I'm concerned. Of course, it's my article because it deals with the most recent situation in the church. So I would like to thank you for being present, and I look forward to seeing you next time. God bless you.